May 18th Committee on Rules together. We do not have a quorum. That's obvious. But we'll, yeah, we'll do that. We will move forward on measures as soon as we have a quorum. I would like to open a public hearing and possible work session on HCR 15. And again, we are in subcommittee for purposes, public purposes. There's nobody signed up. Okay, well, we'll close that public hearing then. All right. Close the public hearing until we have some other members. I'm going to open a public hearing on executive appointments and invite Mr. Darren Hiddleston forward for the Oregon Board of Dentistry. Good afternoon and welcome. Have a seat.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Oregon Board of Dentistry?
Sure. Let me say my name is Darren Hiddleston. I'm a practicing dentist in Grants Pass, Oregon.
Okay.
And I've been down there for about 5 years now. I enjoy dentistry. I always wanted to be a dentist. I really admire the profession as a whole because it's been one that has had a great deal of integrity and well-respected amongst the public. And my goal is being part of the board that I'd be able to help uphold that integrity.
Great.
That the general body of dentistry has enjoyed.
How long have you been in Grants Pass?
5 years.
5 years. And where did you practice before that?
I was in the state of Florida, Gainesville, okay. Florida.
It's quite a move.
It is quite a move, yes. Married an Oregonian.
Oh, well. We like to bring our folks back.
Yes.
Good. And do you have any concerns about your ability in terms of where you live and be able to participate on the board? I don't know how flexible the board has been in terms of video teleconferencing for board member participation. Is that a concern of you?
Not a concern at all. I've been serving for the past 2 years on the board of trustees for the Oregon Dental Association, which has several meetings throughout the year in Portland. So I am used to the drive and actually enjoy it. It's a beautiful state.
Great. Good. Well, I'd like to ask other members if they had other questions, but unfortunately, I'm the only one here. So, Dr. Hiddleston, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate your willingness to serve on these boards. We really appreciate your time and energy. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And I won't ask you about fluoride.
Okay.
You're off the hook on that one.
Thank you.
Okay. Open a public hearing in subcommittee on the Oregon Government Standards and Practices Commission, Thomas Bruner. Mr. Bruner, come on forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm great. How are
Good.
You?
Why don't you, I mean, I know a little bit about you, but for the record, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular commission?
I am Thomas Bruner. I am currently the executive director of Cascade AIDS Project, headquartered in Portland. I moved to Oregon from Fort Worth, Texas, about 6.5 years ago. And my interest in this commission, I think, stems from my work as a nonprofit CEO for the past 17 years and having had the opportunity to work with elected and appointed officials at the federal, state, city, county, school district level. I have lots of respect for government and the role that government plays, and I also think the way that governments do what they do matters a lot. And I think the public trust is well served by this commission, and I think I'd enjoy serving on it and be an asset to it at the same time.
Thank you. And Mr. Bruner, have you ever served on a board or commission for the state of Oregon?
Not for the state of Oregon.
Okay. For the state of Texas?
For the state of Texas.
And what did you do for the state of Texas?
I did a lot of things for the state of Texas, but one of them was serving on the Public Health Advisory Board in the state of Texas.
Okay. And one of the things that concerns me about the GSPC is that as we so fondly call it, is number one, its lack of funding. And so by virtue of that fact, or the fact that there's not a dedicated revenue source, I think the commissioners are really asked to sort of take on more than what most volunteers would normally do on other boards and commissions. Do you have any concerns about your employment requirements and the commission requirements and your ability to fulfill the duties of the commission?
No, I don't. I share your concern, though, about the lack of dedicated funding source for the commission. I think its work is extremely important. And while I share that concern, I don't think that would limit my ability to serve my role.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Bruner? Apparently not.
I'm looking.
Okay. Sarah Ringo, any questions for Mr. Bruner?
Can you start over?
Okay.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
it's okay.
Sorry for being late.
I didn't even notice.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I think you're off the hook.
Oh.
We have to move to the right a little bit. Don't get too nervous.
That's all right.
Okay. You guys have any questions? Sarah Atkinson, possibly?
Can you give me just a second?
Okay, sure. Am I supposed to, did I grab
this?
No. Okay. I'm sorry. I was like way off.
Okay.
When was... Madam Chair?
Senator Atkinson.
When did you mobilize 1.7 million people?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. When did you do your community grassroots work? Is that what you did?
In Fort Worth, Texas, where I moved from 7 years ago.
You've been here 7 years?
I have been here 7 years in mid-July in Oregon.
Have any of the positions you've held on your resume here been very, could they have been seen as partisan?
I think in some sectors they could have been seen as partisan. I think in my exercise of my duties, I have not been partisan, and I think I have worked hard both in Texas and here to be inclusive and to reach out to all people and not treat the issue I work with in a partisan way, because I do not view it as a partisan issue.
When did, a few more?
Go ahead, Sarah.
When did you decide to get involved in nonprofit work?
I've been a nonprofit CEO for 17 years and moved here 6.5 years ago. So my graduate degree is in psychology, and I suppose my intention was always to be involved professionally in nonprofit health and human services in some capacity. So that's all I've done so far in my 19-year career is nonprofit health and human services of different kinds.
Do you think that the Government Standards Practices Commission is partisan now, or has it been partisan the last 5 or 6 or 10 years?
I, since I haven't been a member, and I haven't been privy to the debates, discussions, conversations, I'm not sure I'm in the best position to tell you definitively whether I think that's true or not. I can tell you I view the task of the commission as nonpartisan. I think if it has been partisan in the past, it should not be in the future. And I think serving the public interest statewide should cross all party lines. But I don't feel like I could speak for previous commissioners since I've not been privy to the work they've done and all the factors they took into account as they did their work.
One more question. Do you think that the paperwork that people like us have to fill out to send in to for you to review, do you think that assumes we're guilty or innocent?
I don't think paperwork assumes one way or another. I think the commission is not a legal entity like a judge or jury is in that
worse.
Same sense. I think everyone, including public servants, be they elected or appointed, myself included, is innocent until proven guilty. That would be the point at which I would start, and I would sure work very hard to exercise nonpartisan judgment. I've worked with great people who are D's, great people who are R's, and I've worked with people on both sides that I wouldn't characterize as that.
Have you ever looked at the form I'm talking about?
I have, briefly.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Wrinkle, are you just pondering?
Just pondering, Senator Brown.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bruner.
Thank you.
We appreciate your willingness to come down from Portland and join us today. Okay, we have another list, but I lost it in our paper. Okay. Oregon Investment Council, Katie Durant, come on forward. And we are officially in public hearing. Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you.
Thanks.
I think you got the draft. I want to hear a little bit about your background and why you want to serve on this particular council.
Okay. I'm not usually big on stories, but I think this one probably shows why I want to do it and why I'd be good at it. About 2.5 years ago.
Oh, and I'm sorry. I need your name for the record. That's okay.
Katie Durant. Two partners and I started a development and a real estate company. We acquire and develop commercial real estate, primarily retail. And early on, my mother's family was selling ranch land and exchanging into producing assets. And they were one of the partners on an early transaction. About 2.5-3 months ago, I got a call from my aunt, who's been a school teacher for 20 years. She started a little late in her career. She started when she was about 40. She's now in her early 60s. And she informed me that based upon the returns that we've been able to produce for her, she's able to work part-time. So more than anything else, you know, the material gratification from earning money from my real estate ventures is nice, but it's also pretty rewarding to be able to change the lives of, you know, my family, my aunt, the other investors that I have. So I understand complicated investment transactions. I've been doing that for 19 years, but I also understand that there's a human element, and, you know, what we do is highly important. We need to, you know, be careful, we need to be prudent, and we need to make money for the beneficiaries.
Thank you. Mr. Ant, questions? Sarah Atkinson.
What graduate school did you go to?
I went to Willamette.
What do you mean Willamette? Willamette what?
Willamette University.
Yeah, but what was the name of the school?
Oh, Atkinson.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
You got to work.
Atkinson.
And you worked for Norris Bags?
I worked for Norris Bank and Simpson for 8 years and Cromwell for 7 years.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nice to meet you, Ms. Durant. We talked a little bit before the committee began, and so I'm just going to ask you a couple of the questions that I asked before so that everyone else has the opportunity to know the answers. First of all, I asked how your name was put in the mix to be recommended for the council. Who recommended you to the governor?
I believe it was Randall Edwards. I've served on the OGA for, I think, a little over a year, and I also serve on the OIF, so Oregon Growth Account Board, and the Oregon Investment Fund, which is the Credit Suisse First Boston.
Okay, and you've worked on both of those for about a year?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm going to ask this question too. Do you know Neil or Diana Goldschmidt or are affiliated with them in any way?
I know them both, and I'm not affiliated in a business sense, but I know them both.
Okay, I'm not sure there's many people in Oregon who don't know who they are, but I just wanted to make that very clear. Are you acquainted with or in business with any other member on the Investment Council?
No.
Okay. Can I just ask some more questions?
Sure. Sarah Walker.
Okay. Are you aware of any of the pending legislation that I have this session about the Oregon Investment Council?
Yes. Kate Richardson got me up to speed on the pending legislation.
Okay. Do you have a position on any of that legislation?
No.
Okay.
I'm aware of conflict of interest and other things because I serve on several boards, and so, I mean, those seem fairly standard.
Okay. They've been on the third reading list in the House for a couple of days. I expect they'll be passed out today, and they'll go to the center office for the governor to decide what to do with them, but I think they're good legislation. And are you familiar with the standard of ethics that the Oregon Investment Council lives by?
Yes, Actually, I was given that at a breakfast this morning, and I haven't had a chance to thoroughly digest all of the materials that they've given me, but I've seen it. So I don't view any of that as a problem.
Okay. Well, one of the bills relates to the standard of ethics because it relates to the terms of the members and prohibits a person from serving as chair more than 4 years in a 12-year period, because that is part of the standard of ethics. But the council, without this legislation, has always had the opportunity to waive that at their own discretion or at the governor's discretion by appointing someone to that position. So that's kind of why I wanted to ask you about that. There are some other things about the Oregon Investment Council, their statement of fund governance for the Oregon Public Employees Retirement Fund. Have you seen all those things?
I think I have them in a big three-ring binder, but I haven't thoroughly read all of them.
Okay. How long have you been offered this position? Have you known about it for a period of time, or has this just come to you recently?
It was, discussed, and I, knew it was, probably coming, but the nomination was just last Thursday. I was out of the country for the month of April and just came back, and I think that, I was given the opportunity to kind of get my feet back under me at work and get going.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, when were you first approached about possibly serving on the council?
Probably about a month and a half ago.
Okay. And then you were out of the country about a month, so you haven't had a lot of time
to...
Now we want to know where you went.
I went on a sabbatical to Mexico.
Oh, lovely. Where in Mexico?
Still down there. On the south tip of the Baja.
Okay, very nice.
No, I wasn't going to ask her that question.
I can't tell because I'm really pasty white still, but I go from sheet white to off white, and I'm back to sheet white.
Have you followed the workings of the Oregon Investment Council prior to your being invited to participate?
My master's degree has an emphasis in finance. I do investment real estate. I like investments. I mean, I think of myself as kind of a financial nerd, and I think that what the OIC does for the state is really very important, and thought it would be, a great committee to serve on, because I think that's where my skill set is.
Okay.
So yes, I've known about the OIC, and...
Have you regularly followed their meetings or any of the things that they do?
I have not followed their meetings.
Okay.
So, no.
But you understand those conflict of interest issues? And
I do.
Yeah, and you do that. You do that in your own business anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Mr. Rant, you have a code of ethics in your own business that you're required to follow. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm highly aware of conflict of interest and my reputation is far too important to me to make, to not disclose and other things for us.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask, I think, just one other question?
Senator Walker, go ahead.
Do you know how well the fund is performing, the Public Employees Retirement Fund is performing under the watchful eye of the Oregon Investment Council?
In general terms, I do. I think in the last 2 years they've done, quite well. And they had a couple of rocky years, like most investments did the previous few years. So I know that they're beating their 8% that is their target. So,
mm-hmm.
So in very general terms. But again, I haven't spent a great deal of time following it very closely.
Okay.
Because, I've been concentrating on the other jobs that I've had.
Right.
OGA and my job.
That is my final question. You do have all these other activities that you serve on, and the Oregon Growth Account Board and the Oregon Investment Fund Advisory Board. Will those go away if you're appointed to the Investment Council?
Those will go away. I'm on the board of the YMCA, and I'm taking a leave of absence from the YMCA, and I'm paring back my duties at the school board I'm on.
Okay.
And Thomas's board doesn't take any time at all other than an occasional phone call.
And Thomas is?
Thomas Brunner, the CAP board.
Oh,
he just testified right before.
Oh, okay. I came in on that conversation. So that's what I was getting at, too, because I think there would be a conflict there, but also a time commitment. There's a lot of reading.
No, I think there is a statutory conflict. And
that's what
so
I thought.
I will be removed. Coming off of both of those.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Sir Ringo.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
There are some folks who have suggested that we require that a certain amount of investments be placed in Oregon corporations or in Oregon ventures to help spur business in this state. That is somewhat inconsistent with the goal of just focusing on maximizing revenue. I'm just wondering how you weigh those.
Well, I think maybe I was added to the OGA because I'm probably more low-tech than anyone else, and I'm all about a diverse portfolio. But mostly I'm about trying to make money because that particular fund is to the benefit of the schools. And so my goal there is that we need to invest to make money in the schools. And you know, I think that to the extent that we can make the best investments, and those can be in Oregon, and they should be in Oregon, but first and foremost, we need to take care of the pensioners and the beneficiaries of those funds, and we need to achieve the highest returns, and I think that that's the first and foremost job of that.
That was a pretty diplomatic answer.
Really? I'm usually not diplomatic.
I do think it needs to maximize return, and I just hope you devote all of your efforts to that.
Yeah.
And I very much appreciate your willingness to serve.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Rand, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Unless Senator Atkinson, you have any questions, but I think we're in good shape.
Great.
Appreciate you coming down.
No problem.
Mr. Rich Pepper is the Public Employees Retirement Board, Benefits Board. Sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name's, for the record, Rich Peppers, and I'm the Assistant Executive Director of SEIU Local 503 OPEU. And before I became Assistant Executive Director, I was Political Director for the union and familiar with many of you from that experience. I'm interested in serving on the Public Employees Benefits Board because it's a board that works on providing health insurance for the large chunk of the members that we represent. And in my previous job, I was also working on healthcare issues from time to time and found that I have an interest in that. I think the PED board can do a lot besides just work as a purchaser of health insurance, but also think creatively about models of providing health insurance. And I'm thinking, for instance, of the evidence-based medicine model that they're that they've staked out as a vision for 2007. That's my interest. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Peppers?
I have a couple.
Sarah Atkinson.
Staff. I'm looking at the. Why is Senator Morissette's name listed on the board? Do you know why that is?
Well, often there are boards that actually contain a slot for members who are appointed by the Senate President or the House.
So is there partisan slots on this board?
I believe my recollection is that the Speaker and the Senate President each get to appoint one board member, but one member appointed by the Senate President, one representative appointed by the Speaker of the House.
So they're not designated. All right, thanks.
I think, just for the record, I believe for the last couple of years, the two representatives have been both Republicans. So, yes, they have been partisan.
Nice. That's good.
Thank you.
I'll take that today. Glad to see you have your car. Okay, that's all I have.
Questions?
Just good to see you.
Great to see you. I guess we have no questions.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. We appreciate your willingness to serve.
Thanks.
And then last but not least, in terms of public hearings, State Plumbing Board, Catherine Matamore. Is she here? On the phone? She's on the phone? Okay. So we have a phone number somewhere. Okay. All right. Thanks, Senator Walker. My microphone isn't being smart this today. Like those mics we had elsewhere were.
Kate Matamore.
Hi, Ms. Matamore. This is Senator Brown. How are you?
Oh, hi, Senator Brown. Thanks for calling.
I have you on speakerphone, and so you're not only being heard by the other Senate committee members that are here, Senator Atkinson and Senator Ringo, but folks in the committee hearing room as well as probably all over the Capitol. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome. First question, just we want to know a little bit about yourself and why you're interested in serving on this particular board.
Okay. Well, I think that the position that I was appointed for or suggested for was to fill the Department of Human Services and Health Services position on the Plumbing Board.
Correct.
And right now I'm the program coordinator for the Backflow Cross Connection Program at the State of Oregon.
Could you tell us a little bit about that program?
Right. I apologize, I'm at the airport. Yeah, a little background on the program essentially is for, you know, protection of public health of the drinking water, making sure that it's protected from any contaminants or pollutants that would potentially flow backwards into the water system or into somebody's premise.
Okay. And your interest in serving on the plumbing board, I assume, stems from your current employment.
Right. Right.
Questions for Ms. Matamore?
Ms. Matamore, this is Senator Charlie Ringo. I just want to thank you for your willingness to serve. I think it's important that people step up to the plate and provide some guidance for some of these state agencies, and I just want to tell you I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it, and I would be proud to serve.
Ms. Matamore, this question might be sound sort of absurd, but I'm just curious if you've had any experience dealing with waterless urinals.
Well, I know that it has been a big issue for the board. I had kind of gone back and looked at some of the minutes, and I understand that there is a lot of contention going around about that topic. I don't know the technicalities of it, but I understand that it was approved for a trial, and so I think that's a good thing.
Okay. And so in your role on the board, are you least willing to listen to information and take a look at the data and see what's happening with the pilot projects?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I think that's very important because there's probably a lot of technology that is coming along, you know, for plumbing products. So I think this is very important, you know, for the board to look at them and, you know, make sure that they will work.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I think you have sufficiently swayed the committee, and there are no further questions.
Okay.
We really appreciate your willingness to serve on this board, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you so much, and thanks to the committee.
Travel safely.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to quite cut her off.
Madam Chair.
Sarah Atkinson?
Waterless urinals.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, Sarah.
And I can't get the porta potties taken off the mall.
Sarah Atkinson, you know.
Perhaps I could write that in. Make me a budget note.
I'll let you yield your power in the ways that you know how to use it.
Yes, ma'am. I want them off.
Should we do a public hearing?
Do you want your wife, your mother using those?
Okay, but should we do? I'm going to open it.
Please,
okay. Okay. All right. Can I have the gavel back? That's okay. All right. We're going to close the public hearings on the previous executive appointments. The chair is going to open a public hearing on Michael Washington's appointment to the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. Long-Term Care Advisory Committee appointments of Marian Anderson, William Lycan, Oregon International Board of Commissioners, Port of Coos Bay, Jerry Hamptill, Caddy McCowan, Daniel Smith, and the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, Rosemary Burdine. Anybody wishing to testify on any of those appointments? Nobody screaming? Okay. Close the public hearing. Thanks for all the folks that came to here today on executive appointments. We're trying to interview folks on an individual basis so that we get more familiar with the numbers of Oregonians that are serving on our boards and commissions, and that you get a better chance to know us as well. We are not going to move forward into work session. We'll let the appointments probably sit for until next week. But if there are any problems with your appointments, I'm sure someone either in my office or the governor's office will let you know immediately. But again, we're just so pleased with the breadth and depth of experience of folks that are coming forward to serve on our boards and commissions, and we appreciate you taking your time and energy to join us today. So thank you.
Madam Chair.
Sir Atkinson.
Since you are here, Mr. Bruner and Mr. Ant, could you come see me sometime in the next, before we reschedule?
Okay.
Thanks.
Would a phone call be okay? You want personal appearance?
Either or.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
You want me to excuse you to meet with them right now?
Boy, could I?
You can.
Do you need me for...
Nope.
Well, we need to.
We
help
will
you?
In a minute. Hat. Only to pass out the Hatfield, which you...
We'll vote we had, for.
Okay. Open a work session on HCR 15. The chair would move HCR 15 to the Senate floor with a do adopt recommendation. It is a memorial commemorating Mark O. Hatfield's many years of service to the state of Oregon. I don't think I need to say anything further. Any discussion? Any objection?
Wait a minute, I got a minute. No, Senator Brown?
Yes.
No, I just... Don't glare at me.
Read the resolution, Senator Ringo.
Yes, it's a. I have great respect for Mark Hatfield, and I. Just reading it, but I'm happy to support it. Okay.
Okay, that's fine. Are you done?
Yes. Okay. Everybody's but yours.
All right. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none, so ordered. We're going to let Senator Farioli carry that particular resolution.
You're a collegial group.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. We're going to move into public hearing on Senate Bill 1028. Ms. Lowry, could you bring whoever signed up, please?
We have to do a work session for the executive
board. That's what we do. Yeah, get him back in here after he talks with those guys. Okay. Okay, I'm going to call up Mr. Israeli's son. Did you testify on Monday? Okay. How about Mr. Edwards? Okay. How about Heather McNeil? Ms. McNeil, did you testify on Monday? Mr. Sanderson? Phil Sanderson? Did you testify on Monday, sir?
I did not.
Why don't you come on up? Mr. Blum? Did you testify on Monday, sir? Come on up. Mr. Greenbaum? Did you testify on Monday? Come on up. You guys could, you know, pull my leg because I wasn't able to be here on Monday, so I wouldn't tell. So I appreciate you for being honest.
I would tell.
Oh. Go ahead and start.
My name is Bill Sanderson. I live up in Mill City on the Narragansett River.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an advocate for public use of public rivers and opposed to the bill which restricts public use, also charges fees for river use that's supposed to be free according to the Constitution or what I understand it. I have a simple position and that's it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Short but sweet. And you must be Mr. Greenbaum?
No, I'm Vic
okay.
Bloom.
Okay. Mr. Bloom.
Okay. Madam Chair Brown, Vice President Farioli, members of the board. My name is Dick Bloom, and I'm Vice President for the Operation Rivers Northwest Oregon in Tillamook. Although I have a Trask River Road address, I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm a stakeholder. I don't have riverfront property on the Trask. I'm opposed to SB 1028, and I defer my reasons to Jenny Brickner's testimony in her letter to the Rules Committee on Monday, May 16th. SB 1028 is touted as a document to solve all river use problems between users and owners. That's far from it. It magnifies many times the distinction between user and property owner. The Equal Footing Doctrine is a wonderful document. In addition to the rivers forever free, the part I like best is that no taxes will ever be assessed on private property. Obviously, we need to bring our thinking up to date on both accounts. We at Operation Rivers have been working on a solution for river use for the past 2 years, putting the health of the watersheds first. Our watershed councils have planted over 600,000 trees in Tillamook County, and we've installed over 110 miles of fencing along our sensitive riparian areas. In our current endeavors of mapping the river, and this is to be distributed tree, we're mapping it for the sensitive areas, private and public ownership, garbage and sanitary facilities that are available, boat launch sites, etc. It's become quite clear that the dissension on our rivers is most frequently between fishermen, not property owners. Just within the last few months, a neighbor across the river drove into his property from Portland. There were two fishermen came up from the river looking in his windows. Several years ago, our home and garage is only about 5 feet apart with the breezeway going through there. People would frequently walk all the way up from the river and look in the garage, look in the windows. We are between, there's a county strip of land behind our place on the river. It's about halfway between the county park and the county bridge, which is usually where people put in. They get about halfway, they don't want to go back walking on the slippery rocks and everything, so they start walking up our path. We're 50 feet, the county property comes 50 feet up from the river's edge, but they insist on walking through our property. Well, over 25 years, we've discouraged most of them from doing that. I just suggest in a nice way, why don't you go back the way you came, then you'll know how to get there next time. So, the bill is declaring, the 1028 is declaring a one-size-fits-all, and it doesn't. We get over 90 inches of rain a year in Tillamook. Our local solution, that is the Northwest Rivers, Oregon Rivers, the Northwest Rivers, solution for the local floatage plan is the clear road to solving most of the conflicts between fishermen. We're willing to be a clearinghouse for information for other rivers who want to try this approach with us. All it takes is a handful of willing, active people to get the job done. We would like that chance, and you have our plan that was presented by our President, Leslie Pittman, to your committee on Monday. We're optimistic that we can succeed in our endeavors. We need a 5-year moratorium to do this. We've talked to many, many property owners, and it's going to be incredibly amazing how much access there's going to be on the Trask River when we're finished with our experiment. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? I think you're safe today. Thank you very much.
You're safe today.
Mr. Greenbaum, come on up. And then, let's see. Mr. Gus Meyer from Tillamook. And Ms. Donna Lane. Would you go ahead and get started?
My name is Michael Greenbaum, and I'm both a riverfront and home property owner on the Mackenzie and an avid river.
Two things. We need to move the mic. You have a pretty soft voice. We're going to ask you to move the mic in front of you, and then I need to have you identify yourself for the record.
Okay.
And maybe you did, and I just missed it. I think maybe you
did. Do it again for you.
Sure.
My name is Michael Greenbaum, and I am a recreational river user and a riverfront home property owner on the Mackenzie. And in short, I am very opposed to this bill, and I have submitted to you a 5-page editorial that I wrote for our newsletter, and I'd rather just let that speak for me.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Sure.
Any questions?
I do. Thank you.
Okay. Wait. We got some questions for you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I'm going to hold questions until the whole panel's done. So. Go ahead. Is it Ms. Lane?
Yes. Honorable Senators, my name is Donna Lane. I own property in Tillamook County. And I do not own riverfront property, nor do I, am I a river recreationalist. So one might think that I have nothing to lose, whichever way this particular bill goes. However, in my opinion, what I have to lose is my good faith that this state will do the correct and proper thing and follow the legal channels when it comes to taking people's property that they bought in good faith, that was listed on their title and deed, that they own to the middle of the river, only to at this point discover that no, the state may indeed have legal claim to the beds and banks. And I don't dispute that issue. What I do dispute is a backdoor approach to claiming beds and banks by the state. These people who are looking to lose this, these properties or portions of their property, I believe deserve the respect due them by going through the proper channels and the due process. I have, in the time I've been in Tillamook County, listened and watched the fights that have incurred over the riparian areas that the state has mandated that riparian owners meet certain requirements, and you know, the countless man hours on the state and county level that have been used up, that the salaries I'm sure are enormous. And it, to me, it's kind of like with this issue of opening these areas to the public, it's kind of like on the state level, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. You've spent all this time trying to preserve riparian areas, and now you're going to want to open it to the public. If you do, in my opinion, the damage that's going to be done to these riparian areas are going to be irreparable. Thank you for hearing me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Sir?
Madam Chair Brown, Vice Chair Ferrioli, committee members, or member, I am A.D. Gus Meyer. I live in Tillamook, Oregon, and I'm on the board of directors of two natural resource agencies in the area. First of all, I'm going to talk to conflicts with a little different twist. Conflicts by ORS statute stipulate that there's to be 10 fully documented reports for each river. And the reports are not just letters, but are to include all parties involved. The recreational use created, in this case, a landowner and a Kilchis has restricted the use of his launch ramp. A drift boater was denied entry to that boat ramp, so he then turned in the landowner to the county for removing riparian vegetation, and the landowner was fined. Kayakers, in another case, kayakers tied up a launch ramp for 17 minutes. And that was right in front of me. Now, I took it as arrogance, but the man behind me took it as conflict, and I had a hard time keeping him cool. Cutting riparian trees to avoid their fedoras, 3 out of 4 of these trees led to serious erosion problems. Cutting riparian trees to reach prime water areas for fishing takes away the protection that we're spending millions to protect. Not understanding fishing ethics. Now, this one can be solved, but today the floaters and the rafters don't understand. If I'm fishing on the far side of the river, I want them to come to my side. And when I motion them over, they think it's a threat. In fact, they're disturbing my fishing area, and that doesn't sit well. 12 years of drift boating, and I have not had one incident. Unlike Senator Atkinson, it must be my good looks and my karma.
Too bad he missed that comment.
It's on record, I hope.
Yeah, it is.
DSL and Attorney General's Office Public Common Use Legal Opinion has already created a contentious issue in the Tillamook area. In fact, the Tillamook County Commissioners did publish and televise a best advice to avoid serious conflicts, because the opinion is that if you can walk the bank, you can get to fishing, and there are some prime fishing holes that are walkable too. Drift boaters and fishing club leasers have mutual understandings of river use. In the boat is no problem. A drift boat recently was stolen from a barn. And also recently, axes and firewood were stolen right out of sheds. These, I think, are the other side of the conflict issue. On launches and ramps, the ORS statute institutes parking space, sanitation stations, and refuge containers. 3 years ago, state budget cuts took away refuge service, and that was a mess. The garbage was flowing all over the place. 2 years ago, with state budget cuts, the refuge containers disappeared. They were tired of the complaints of the garbage flowing over. Last year, budget cuts are starting to take away Port-a-John potties at the boat launches. Tillamook County's banks are very fragile and easily erodible. This bill would permit drift boaters in this case have caused undercut of paving. There was a 72-degree slope, and it was convenient for drift boaters to drop their drift boat over the edge of the bank of the road, and it is now eroded to the point where the paving was eroding. The county had to go in and repair it, put in gambions, and build it back up to be a safe condition to use the road. Any navigational or recreational use waterway bill must regulate to the use to go to the established launches. Enforcement. One state marine board officer was added last year. An additional part-time officer is requested this year. They cover four major coastal bays and ocean shores. The OSP, the Oregon State Police cadet program we have for enforcement of our waterways, the budget cut recently went from 5 cadets to 3. Senate Bill 1028 must have funding mandates. Fire safety. Any navigability or recreational use waterway bill must regulate fire safety restrictions. Tillamook County private and public forest areas are essentially closed 6 to 10 weeks in the summer for smoking restricted to inside vehicles and no open fires. No more Tillamook burns, please. Pollution. DEQ has total daily maximum loads in 5 major rivers in Tillamook County. Bacteria is one high concern. Also, temperature is a concern. There are no sanitation stations along the way, only potty stops. It's a fragile ecosystem. Stakeholders, landowners, and farmers have spent millions to isolate bank usage, thousands of miles of fencing to keep cattle from banks and waters, millions of dollars of riparian, stream, and fish passage improvements, and erosion stabilization projects. Recreational abuses will happen from climbing the banks. If you let them on the banks, we know from our experiences they're going to climb them. And floatage boats being dragged up and down banks at regular points will also lead to more erosion. And we already have enough sediment in our rivers. Tillamook County, Senate Bill 1028, impact areas, 597,000 square miles. 597,000 square miles. 1,287 stream miles, excluding irrigation and drainage waterways. We have 7 major rivers, and their streams and tributaries are widely dispersed. Tillamook County climatic conditions, and you heard Mr. Blum earlier refer to the lowland of 90 inches a year. Well, folks, in the uplands, we get 200 inches of water a year precipitation. Trask River documented hydrologic flows for reference will go from 50 cubic feet per second in the summer to 34,000 cubic feet per second during our high flashy hydrologic flows. Now that comes out of the river gauge at mile 10. so it's even more further down. And we have mental...
Can I get you to kind of wrap up your...
I'm wrapping up right now.
Okay, thank you.
We have minimum snowpack for continued flow. One size does not fit all. And I ask consideration to support the local solutions people. This bill is too far-reaching. I urge this committee to oppose this bill and maybe even kill this bill.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Questions, Senator Farrell?
I do have questions for the panel. First for the folks from the McKinsey. The McKinsey was one of the adjudicated navigable rivers in the state of Oregon. I think it was one of the first nine that was adjudicated. And a very controversial adjudication, I believe, back in the 70s. Would that not mean that the beds and banks are already owned by the state of Oregon and that they're public?
Yes.
But you believe that Senate Bill 1028 somehow expands access beyond the declaration of navigability?
I'm not too sure what you're trying to get at. Could you?
In my opinion, the issue of Senate Bill 1028 is the recreational use and the description of rights under the Attorney General's opinion that was recently released.
Okay.
And to me, both of those things, I think, are less... less broad than the Declaration of Navigability, which just is public land to the high water mark. So the McKinsey's already, beds and banks are already public land to the high water mark. So I just was wondering if you thought that 1028 somehow would increase recreational use of the McKinsey.
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
I think 1028 has, on that aspect, on the use of the McKinsey, I think it has very negligible effect on the McKinsey.
Okay. And this for the panel.
Can I follow up on that question?
Sure. What it will do, what I understand one of the intentions would be, if you would intend to register every boat that floated the McKinsey, you're going to have a lot of law enforcement around there, and you're going to be taking public money, and all the law enforcement's going to be doing, really, is just checking up on people as to whether or not they're registered, which to me is a waste.
Yeah, and actually, if I could answer that.
Sure.
I don't think that's the intention at all. The intention is to try to reduce conflict on the rivers, and one of the issues that contributes to conflict is anonymity. The public uses the river, but the landowners and citizens can't identify who's on the river. Most motorized boats and the other boats have a license number on the boat. You can tell who owns the boat and that it's licensed. But if floaters are using the river and they use it in a way that's not legal, use firearms, trespass, damage property, The unfortunate fact is that a landowner who has a problem with that or who wants to assert their rights needs to confront or sometimes feels they need to confront the river recreationist. This would at least allow a mechanism where a landowner could, from a distance, identify the number on the boat and have a recourse in order to get some redress of that grievance if there were liabilities or violations of the law. So in that way, it removes anonymity. And we believe that anonymity actually may, in some cases, contribute to bad behavior on the river.
I think you're going to create conflict rather than reduce it, because I think you're going to have a lot of people, particularly homeowners, running around collecting numbers based on their assumption that somebody did something. And they're going to get on the phone and contact the new police force, which will be hired from the money that you intend to collect under this bill. You're going to have a lot of local police forces running around who have, for the most part, sort of a relationship with property owners, and you're going to get a lot of biases. And law enforcement officers are going to have to make decisions, local law enforcement officers are going to have to make decisions at that particular moment based on what a property owner said. And I have a tendency to believe there's going to be a lot of biases in any law enforcement that this bill will... you follow what I'm saying?
Madam Chairman, if
sure,
I could.
Sorry,
I do, but I don't think it'll be any different than automobiles.
Right.
And people drive around with an automobile license, and if you run over somebody's front yard and somebody writes a license number down, the local law enforcement doesn't run that person to ground. They write them a letter. And or the landowner signs a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a new police force involved in that process.
One of my understandings is that there are three sub accounts that this newly collected money mm-hmm. will go into, one of them being law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And the Oregon Marine Board will have the authority to determine, make deals with local law enforcement agencies. And I don't see that doing much for recreational boaters. And I really don't see it doing much for property owners, except creating conflict where conflict doesn't exist. All of a sudden, I can call up the sheriff's office, the local law enforcement office, which would be down in Springfield, and complain about boat 734, which may or may not have done something that I see from my
Couldn't you do that now? I mean, your river's been declared navigable. I assume you have the ability, if somebody's breaking the laws, you know it, to call your local law enforcement now.
But if you give me and everybody numbers, we're going to go number crazy.
The only difference is you'll have the ability to identify the
operator. We're going to fabricate things that didn't happen, happens, or are marginal.
So talk to me about the fact that people are using our rivers without sanitary or adequate sanitary services, without trash collection. Don't you see that as being an issue at all?
No, I see the issue. Where I live, they're pulling trash cans. Why are you pulling
trash
cans?
What do you mean they're pulling trash cans?
Where there was a trash can during the summer, it doesn't exist anymore.
And why do you think that is?
That's a good... Well, it could be revenue. It could be...
Probably is.
It could be, but it could be where a few people here decide they want the trash can instead of there, they want it over here.
Okay.
And as far as people defecating on private lands...
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a minority rather than a majority, and I really don't think it's caused to hire a whole bunch of cops to go running around to check where people are going to the bathroom.
Okay. Well, with all due respect, I don't think this the registration fee raises enough money to hire a bunch of cops. I mean, I think we're anticipating, to some extent, some law enforcement, but I think the focus is making sure that there are adequate public services on the rivers that are being used now. I mean, that's what I see. And obviously, there's also the safety component. But in law enforcement now, I mean, our Oregon State Police isn't sitting out on I-5 registering who's breaking the speed limit, because they've got more important things to do, i.e., they're dealing with meth problems or, you know, wildlife violations or whatever Oregon State Police does. But I, you know, some of it's a priority issue, and I don't see, you know, if you sat and called right now your local law enforcement about somebody in a green boat doing whatever on your property, you know, unless it's, you know, potentially dangerous or whatever, my guess is you don't have local law enforcement come show up now.
No, you don't.
Right. Okay.
Madam Chair, do you have some other questions?
They're very early.
And just before I leave that, one of the reasons to put additional dollars into law enforcement is for search and rescue reimbursements.
Right.
It isn't just to have a bunch of people running around rivers, you know, harassing boaters. It is, in fact, if there's a problem today, usually what law enforcement have told us is that you can't get to the river beach fast enough to confront the person that has the conflict, and you can't identify them later. So the reason for having the fee is to create a registry, put a number on the boat, defer some of the cost of law enforcement. It is not to massively increase the law enforcement presence.
All you're doing, though, is creating a bunch of...
I respectfully have to disagree. I grew up in Minnesota. We're required to register all boats in Minnesota. You don't have a number of cops
out, you know, watching every single canoe on the Boundary Waters canoe area, making sure they're complying with every law. I mean, I just have to disagree with you. So, but we appreciate you.
I'm talking too much. I understand that.
Yeah. I really appreciate you bringing your concerns, and I hear what you're saying. I don't think we have the resources to have that level of law enforcement to respond to every single complaint. If we did, we would be putting them elsewhere, like on our meth problem.
Just
so.
One more. You've given the authority for all that money to the Oregon Marine Board.
Ah, okay.
Okay? Now, the Oregon Marine Board is notorious for anti-non-motorized...
That's correct.
And pro-motorized
voting.
I don't expect to get any benefits from any money that the Oregon Marine Board is going to spend on themselves. If anything, the only money that they're going to give the law enforcement, if indeed they do, will be to locals who favor locals. In my area, I would get the benefit of the doubt. If I leave and go boating someplace else, that guy's going to get the benefit of the doubt because those are the relationships that are formed. You're not going to hire state police to do this. The money's going to go into, pardon the terminology, the local good old boy society, and they will honor the people who live in the same area they do.
Okay. Just so you know, Ms. Goss-Duran is in this room, and our last Marine Board appointment was a sailor, a non-motorized boat, primarily, I assume. And the next appointee is also going to be a non-motorized advocate. So we're hoping to change the board. If you don't think the Marine Board is the appropriate board of jurisdiction, can you name another authority, another board that you would prefer, i.e. Parks and Recreation, that might be more appropriate?
If you're going to follow through with this, then perhaps you ought to create a non-motorized board just the way you have a motorized board and put non-motorized voters on it rather than money going to a motorized clique.
Okay. And just for the record, I'm a kayaker, so not whitewater.
Okay.
So, okay. Other questions? Senator Farrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the panel. The Attorney General's opinion is very broad about recreational use of Oregon's rivers. Yet there's nothing really very clear in statute about defining floatage. And one of the attempts of this bill is to try to put some clarity into that process. Right now, citizens have the right to float in the Trask and use the Trask recreationally. And according to the state attorney general's opinion, likely to the high water mark. So I guess the question is, for the folks from the Trask, it seems like the concerns that you have now would be addressed in Senate Bill 1028 because it creates a right of the landowner to impose a legal duty on recreationists to not harm the riparian improvements that have been put there. It also creates some indemnification and protections for the landowners if recreationists do harm or destroy those riparian improvements, including tree planting and riprap and gabions and other in-stream structures that might be there. So I guess what I'm asking you is it looks like now the Attorney General's opinion is allowing a broadening of recreation without a concurrent increase in protections for landowners. I understand what you're trying to do on the Trask. What you described is what we were trying to pass and did pass in the Senate in the last legislative session with Senate Bill 928. Mm-hmm. It was to take one river, do an intensive recreation management survey and study, and run out a pilot project. That bill did not pass the House, never reached the House floor. It was stranded during the last days of the session. To try to do that now after the Attorney General's opinion and to try to do it river at a time seems to be an awful big exercise in energy and time. It doesn't really solve the problem in our opinion. So I guess I'd just ask you to touch on the issue of the Attorney General's opinion. You must have read it. And it was testified on Monday that you don't agree with it and think there are other attorney general's opinions or case law that are inconsistent with the attorney general's opinion. And we drilled into that and found that the case law that was cited was on a case that was overturned on appeal. and that the Attorney General's opinion that was cited really isn't in conflict with the most recent AG's opinion if you read them side by side. So tell me about, you know, since we've seen an AG's opinion that it apparently broadens the rights of the public to recreate to the high water mark, how does that affect your thinking on the drafts?
Right now, my reference to it, Senator Ferrioli, was when she came out and said that the people are already entitled to use the banks of the rivers. That opened the door for those people to walk down a county road and go into that favorite fishing hole where the fish are stacked up on private property. It's been private property for 63 years. And until the law is codified, that owner, it's going to be a very contentious issue, if not even something serious, because it's his private fishing hole. And we have dozens of those where when it's a temporary between now and the codification that she has really opened the door to this exposure of serious contention, because all the people who have been restricted from this favorite fishing hole or holes on the Trask, it would be seven, would now be able to walk up the banks according to the, she has said, by common law, public common law, you've got the right to walk on the banks underneath the high water line. And that's the contention today until we settle this issue. After the issue is settled, then I think the landowners will swing around. They'll have to accept whatever goes into law. And that's where I was coming from.
Okay, I appreciate that. I couldn't agree more. The point is that Senate Bill 1028 is an attempt to clarify the rights of recreationists and the rights of landowners. The difference is that in the navigability issue, the title passes to the state. And in Senate Bill 1028, it doesn't matter who owns the beds and banks. It doesn't deal with the issue of ownership at all. I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree at all. As a matter of fact, I agree with you. Until this issue is put in statute, it is going to be contentious and it will precipitate conflict. Senate Bill 1028 is an attempt to put it into statute.
And I have to appreciate it, that again, Senator. And when you look at the ordinance, I worked for volunteered for 5 years on our ordinance committee on riparian areas. Mm-hmm. And that is as divisive an issue as you can split a watermelon. And it's red. It's ripe on both sides. And it takes in, today we have 50-foot areas where the landowner by our county ordinance is accountable. It isn't any recreational user who comes in there who's got to cut a 6-foot swath, maybe only 100 feet of riparian area that has been improved and protected so that he can portage or they can portage around. And that's where it goes beyond the banks. It's that open permission to cross properties. And as you heard from Mr. Blum, I believe it was, that people are already forcing the issue to cross without getting permission. And we need to educate, and I appreciate that no matter which bill gets accepted on navigation, we need to codify that so that there's a basis of determination and not just conflicts and serious conflicts.
The portage issue. Clarify the portage issue.
Clarify the portage issue. And the using the upland, up above the upland vegetation line, which is controlled by the county ordinance. And that's why we're promoting local solutions, because in our area, we deem ourselves to be excellent stewards of the land. And we want to protect that. We put all this time, all these volunteer hours into it, and we don't want to lose what we've gained. So it's the upland land use that is disturbing a good number of us.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate you coming down and letting us grill you a little bit.
Okay, I'm going to next ask the next panel to come up, but on your way up, I'm going to close the public hearing, open a work session on executive appointments, Board of Directors of State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation and Water Resources Commission. Mr. Israelison, Mr. Edwards, and Ms. McNeil, I know you all testified on Monday, so I'm going to ask that you keep your remarks brief. Work session, the chair would move Catherine Travis, Rob Van Cleve to the Board of Directors of SAFE. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Charlie, you want to carry this? Senator Ringo, do you want to carry that?
Yes, Kay.
In work session on the Water Resources Commission, the chair would move Charles Barlow, John Jackson, Mary Malloy, Jay Rasmussen, Gary Reed, and Susie Smith. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none. So ordered. Senator Farioli, would you carry the Water Resources Commission?
Madam Chairman, since Rob Van Cleve is a constituent of mine, may I be authorized to trade with Senator Ringo on the carrying of the two executive appointments by committee?
Will you vote for my bill? You know, yes, I'd be glad to. I'd be glad to trade.
No, but
I think Ms. Travis is a...
No, but I'll trade you 6-for-2.
It's a deal.
Okay.
Deal. Done deal.
All right. We're switching. Sarah Farioli is carrying SAFE. Sarah Ringo's carrying the Water Resources Commission. I appreciate both of you very much. We'll go back to public hearing on Senate Bill 1028. Mr. Israelson. Israelison. Yes?
Can I ask? I can't read that. What does that say on your shirt?
Your button.
Your button. Oh, I thought you might know.
Truth of the matter is he can't read it. He can't put it out here either.
Yeah, arms aren't long enough. I'm sorry. All the navigable waters of the state shall be common highways forever free.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, take it away.
Just a moment. I have to get my notes in order.
Madam Chairman, all right. This might be, Mr. Israelson might consider this mere sophistry, but registering the boat isn't charging a fee for the river. If you leave the boat in the garage, you still register the boat.
Mr. Art, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Art Israelson. I am the River Access Director for the Northwest Steelheaders. I'm concerned about Senate Bill 1028, especially Section 2. The State Land Board, by rule, shall adopt and administer a statewide management plan to govern the recreational use of Class 1 waterways, so on and so forth. What I'm really concerned about is to drop down to Section 3 of that Section 2. Notwithstanding Section 1 of this subsection, the Board may enter into contracts or agreements with another public body as defined under ORS 174-109 to develop and administer the state management plan. And let's take the example of Tillamook County. The county commissioners could be this sub-government. They can administer the plan any way they want to. And we end up right back in the same problem that we have now, that local jurisdictions can alter the statewide plan, and then when people travel here, especially from other states, they have absolutely no idea what the rules are. This destroys the statewide plan. And I'm really concerned about that.
Do you have any suggestions?
Pardon?
Do you have any suggestions? What would be your advice?
Stick to the statewide plan.
Okay.
Do not go to local control. I can see where maybe the Division of State Lands would like to see local control, because then they get out of the problem of having to manage it.
Okay.
And I can understand that. But we recently received a letter, and it was in the packet that I gave you last Monday, from a man in Montana that was accosted here, and he wrote us a letter wanting to know what the rules were, and we couldn't tell him. It's an out-of-state person, interstate commerce. I'm also concerned that there's a law from Phillips Petroleum versus Mississippi in 1988. A state as administrator of the trust in navigable waters on behalf of the public does not have the power to abdicate its role as trustee in favor of private parties. Although Oregon has for 146 years neglected its navigability claims, they remain totally invalid today. Totally valid, excuse me. The United States Supreme Court has recognized there is no unfairness or immorality in the state's pursuit of ownership claims based on the equal footing doctrine, even if the claims have lain dormant for decades. The generations of trustees have slept on public rights does not foreclose their successors from awakening. And I think it's time that we quit dodging the issue of navigability and apply the state law and the federal laws. I heard just recently today that there's a lot of pollution in the rivers of Tillamook counties. I think there are more cows defecating on the land than there are people, and I think that's the reason that pollution is there. I think that there will be serious contention between the landowners and the recreationists if we go to local control. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McNeil.
Thank you. My name is Heather McNeil. One of the things I've been looking into in regards to this is the comparison to the Oregon Beach Law, which has a very, very similar history. 1028 is amazingly complicated compared to the Oregon Beach Law. The beauty of the Beach Law is that every kid knows they can go down to the beach and run border to border. Now, you can't trespass across somebody's property to get there. Everybody knows that. It's pretty clear you need to go in at a public access point, but once you are there, you are free to move up and down it. And I really request that any law that come out of the legislature look to that. One of the really important advocates for the Oregon Beach Law was Governor Oswald West. And in 1911, he addressed the legislature. He said, "The state which permits the great storehouses of its God-given wealth to be vandalized by selfish greed is indeed a very poor guardian of the rights of its children. And it is equally true that the state which neglects, through delay and inaction, to provide for speedy, adequate, and effective conservation of its resources is an unfit and unwise trustee of the property and the privileges of its citizens that are yet to be born." That's what I'm looking for, is a law that protects the rivers for the citizens yet to be born. I think you look back a few years, a lot of people knew it was okay to move up and down the river. I think there's some failures in education, which has come up again and again and again, about trespassing, about conservation, about being good outdoors people and not destroying the land that you're crossing. But that's what I would advocate for. Finally, there's a really important Supreme Court case in 1909, Trullinger v. Howe. "A navigable or floatable river or stream, however, is a common right of highway by nature. It is not created or established by any governmental agency, nor can it be abandoned or discontinued by such an agency." Giving this over to small government anywhere in the state to allow them to do that makes it, once again, very confusing for anyone to take a family vacation across the state and try to figure out where they can go, where can they be on this river, what can they do. It needs to be a statewide solution. And if you have any questions, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards.
By the way, Mr. Ferrioli, you have the written testimony now. It's there. Yes.
8 pages. So thank you.
Yes, I won't read that. I do have some interesting comments. One, I think that somebody today mentioned that the private fishing hole for 63 years. 63 years ago, that piece of water was considered a public highway. It was deemed navigable by the state of Oregon, and the state of Oregon had taken control of the bed of that particular river. And in fact, the state of Oregon took control of all these rivers throughout the state. In 1917, they reaffirmed it. In 1923, they referred it to the people as a constitutional amendment and was voted on in 1924 that the state did indeed have a right to claim eminent domain on all the rivers, and the state made them state highways. That law has not been that declaration has not been overturned. Most rivers in the state still, if you sort through all the statutory stuff and you sort through all the court decisions, remain public highways. Therefore, it really is ludicrous that we're trying to figure out how to regulate the use of highways in ways that you know, I understand, you know, licensing is acceptable. The problem is we have with licensing, I mean, I don't have a problem with licensing. I was an advocate for fishermen wearing their licenses on their lapels as well. That was killed by the Fish and Game, but I think if you're going to do boats, you better do walkers too. The McKenzie River, there was this misstatement made by somebody else testifying on Monday. I wanted to correct it. They stated that there was never a case that adjudicated the public's right to stand on the banks. The McKenzie River was actually first adjudicated to be a navigable river in 1931 in the case of Thompson v. Dana. And in that case, the judge was very clear that because the McKenzie River was a navigable river, the public had a right to stand on the bed and banks of that river and fish. That was 1931. There's a case in 1869 where a judge was also very careful to say that the riparian landowner has no right to prevent somebody on the river from coming ashore. So we have a long history of the public has a clearly adjudicated right to use the banks and the beds of streams. I think there's another point. We dance around the word floatage. There have been court decisions that have basically said floatage is synonymous with the word navigability. To declare a floatage easement is to declare a navigability easement. The right of portage that has been discussed dates back to 1787. It was granted by the Third Congress, and in the Northwest Ordinance. So a lot of landowners seem to think that the right of portage is a new thing in this bill. It is not. It's merely a codification of federal statute. In other words, we have had the right of portage since before Oregon became a state. That won't go away. Whether or not you include it in this bill really is moot. The other thing I want to mention is that the beach bill that was mentioned was based on what is called customary use, not public trust doctrine. It was a rather interesting piece of politics. However, customary use plays a role in the rivers. It has been a customary use of the public to use all of Oregon's rivers for recreation. As I say, the first laws that granted us this date way back. My suggestion to this board and to this committee and to the Senate and to the House is that you merely go back and you look at the law that was on the books in 1940. It includes three key elements that I believe are going to be necessary for any law to be successful. Firstly, there has to be a test of navigability clearly defined that both landowners and recreationalists can understand. That was done for us by the courts in 1869. There's no reason that we can't refer back to that test because that was the test that was ultimately applied in the recent McKenzie River case. Also, I believe that we can look to the second part of that is that we, in 1940, there was a law in the books that said, frankly, anybody with a valid fishing license, hunting license, or trapping license had a right to stand on the bed and banks of any navigable stream within the state of Oregon. So I think that if you look at those laws, it meets the three criteria that you need. You need clarity, you need some sort of test so you can settle litigation, and certainly you need to clarify what are the public's common law rights. End with that.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Not all deeds go to the center of a river. Many of them go to the high water mark, the low water mark, the center of the river, across the river, the thread of the river, which is the center of the current main channel. In the recent case on the John Day in the appeals court, the court said that you can't have one half of a river navigable and the other half not navigable. And at the present time, we have this total mismatch of deeds. And the police officer answering a call has absolutely no idea what's going on. And it creates a great deal of problem. And if it's from bank to bank or from the high water mark to the high water mark, it solves the problem.
May I respond?
Sure, sir, fairly.
In answer to your question, yes. You're right. That's why the issue of ownership is really less important than the question of how to manage. And so Senate Bill 1028 doesn't address the issue of ownership. but it does address the issues of how to manage.
Okay.
It's like the best analogy I can come up with is everybody. You've got the three of you, the four of us are all playing Monopoly, but each of us are playing by different rules. And I think the goal of this bill is to make sure everybody's playing by the same rules. Simple as that.
May I make a comment?
Sure.
That is what the laws that were on the books in 1940 did. They leveled the playing field. Everybody understood, one, the test for navigability or public use, and two, that it didn't matter who owned the bed of the stream, and three, the public still had a right to use the bed and banks for recreational purposes. And that's the beauty of those laws. They were incredibly simple, and they were so simple, in fact, they're very eloquent.
Great, and I guess I don't disagree, and I've read the last bit of your your testimony, and I don't disagree with your suggestions, but I think it's fair to say that the difficulties we're facing in 2005 are very different than those faced in the early 1900s in terms of the number of people, and that's why we felt strongly about having a management plan. At that point, I'm going to, like, unless you have any questions, Sarah Farrelly, we're going to cut it off. We anticipate we'll be back soon, so stay tuned, and you know how to reach both of us. And
I just want to say that it was 1957 that those laws were repealed,
the
turn of the century.
Population, the state of the population has changed substantially since 1957. And our river use has changed substantially since then.
Yes, we're no longer shooting logs down them. We're shooting kayaks down them.
So, okay. Thank you all very much. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1028. I believe there's no further business to come before the Senate Rules Committee today. We thank you all for your attendance. Appreciate you traveling the long distance and travel safely in this wild, stormy winter weather. We're adjourned.